This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. A busy year is ahead for Congress, and we'll be discussing that today with West Michigan Congressman Fred Upton. He's chairman of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. Thank you for being here.
Absolutely.
And Yvonne Zipp, reporter of the Kalamazoo Gazette, joining us as well.
Thanks for having me, Gordon.
Yvonne, first question.
I wanted to ask if there has been any update on the former Allied paper site in downtown Kalamazoo.
Well, you know, I saw a good question. I saw an EPA list of options last week that I read through. It's about, I want to say, an 8 or 10 page little summary of a variety of different things, from leaving it alone to taking it all out. I would say that the good news is, and I'm for that last option, taking it all out. I've made that very clear from the start. I want to say the good thing is that the cost of all those options has dropped dramatically. Initially, I think they were talking about $240 million, in essence, and now I want to say it's, what, $167 million, I think, was what the number was. So that's a good step in the right direction. I think that they're listening to us. As I understand it, there's going to be a couple of opportunities for not only citizens to weigh in with written comments. I think that they're we've got a couple months before they actually make a recommendation back to the community. As you, the listeners know, I've been working hand in hand with both of our two senators, Carl Levin and Debbie Stabenow. We've been on the same page thus far. I've not had a chance or an opportunity to talk to them or even our staffs talking since this report came out last week. But I would like to think that at some point very soon we'll again get together, coordinate our efforts to be on the same page, and I'd like to think that they too will join me in supporting that last option, that is, to get it out of here, and anxious to see the process move forward with that conclusion.
How do you make the case in sort of the broader national context that the Allied paper landfill site is worth perhaps diverting some money from something else in order to get a complete cleanup?
You know what? EPA, is they make these decisions. This is a pretty urbanized area. It is close to a very important river that ends up, you know, emptying into our freshwater system, the Great Lakes. It's been around for a long time, this issue. And the idea that we're just going to just let it stay, I don't think is the right course. And I applaud our local leaders from the mayor on down, lots of community activists on this. I'm not aware of anyone that's really on the other page, perhaps. But, you know, particularly the good news that you got to see is the cost has come down by nearly $100 million. They've looked, I want to say, and that was really came about from the meetings that we had here in Kalamazoo. There were a couple different private sector sources that sort of said, oh, how did that number get so high? We can do it for a lot less. And thank goodness it appears as though EPA listened and maybe they found some alternatives to the otherwise higher cost of actually getting it out. So it's, you know, let's hope things proceed on as they've been going now. We'll see.
The ball's in the EPA's court. How much is there for you, for Senator Levin, for Senator Stabenow to do? Could you hold hearings on this, for instance, if you wanted to shed more light on it?
Well, I don't know that you'll actually see hearings, but certainly the Chicago Regional Office ought to be listening when we are all together. And, you know, I can remember, 10 years ago or so when we had the issue with Millwood and the Allegan, you know, coming through. And it actually took a visit by then, the EPA administrator here to Kalamazoo. He saw what was going on. I confronted him in a nice way. We spent a number of hours together, and he helped reverse the decision that perhaps Chicago, the regional office, was going to make. And I think it's going to require that same type of attention. Now I know we have a Democratic president. I'm a Republican. Before it was reversed, we had a Republican president and me that was there. But I'd like to think that both of our two senators will be responsive with me and will show a united front and that they'll listen and do the right thing.
I want to ask you about another issue involving the environment, and that's the chemical spill in West Virginia, which, of course, is contaminated drinking water. There's been a call for some hearings, perhaps in the House Energy and Commerce Committee, on federal regulations. Are you open to that?
Well, a couple things. I've talked to, you know, in West Virginia, they have 3 members of Congress. I've talked to all 3 of them. in the last 2 weeks. It is maybe more direct in the Transportation Committee, as there is a Water Resources Subcommittee, of which the one of the members from the West Virginia delegation is actually the ranking member. So he would actually be chairman of that committee, that be the Democrats were in charge of the House. I do see a role that perhaps will play. We've been in the middle of holding a number of hearings on TSCA, which is the Toxic Substances Control Act, a bill that needs to move with bipartisan support. And there very well may be an element here that we can look at in terms of potential for making sure that the door gets closed, that there is proper inspection. This cannot happen again. It's something that we'll entertain. We've got some hearings already scheduled on TSCA, and I'm planning, as I looked at the next couple of months, we're planning to move this legislation through the subcommittee and through the Energy and Commerce Committee and ultimately to the House floor. There have been some discussions with the Senate as well. I mean, I think that this is a bill that actually does get to the president's desk. And what we learned from West Virginia may well be very relevant to being a part and parcel of this bill. We'll see. But, you know, as you know, this just happened in the last week or two. We've got also one of the members, one of the three members from West Virginia is on the Energy and Commerce Committee, Dave McKinley. And I think his district was directly impacted, though it's more likely that it was Shelley Moore Capito's district. But ultimately, we need to try and take steps so that it doesn't happen again. We'll try to find the right vehicle. And it ought to be in a bipartisan way.
The Washington Post has a story on this today, noting it has been 38 years since Congress passed a major piece of legislation regulating toxic chemicals, even though there's no disagreement that TSCA needs an overhaul.
Yep. Well, this has been on my list to get done. And I guess you could say we've made more progress than anybody else, because we've actually held hearings, but we are actually moving to a point where we can actually get it approved in subcommittee and full committee and to the House floor. It's on my list of things to try and get done.
Yvonne?
Over the weekend, former Michigan GOP Chair Betsy DeVos had some strong words to say about Republican National Committeeman Dave Adjema's anti-gay remarks, and was urging the Republican leadership to, you know, stand up and against these kinds of remarks. What do you have a response to what she said?
Yeah, I applaud her for that. I saw the story Sunday in the paper. I saw it online, MLive, and I was carrying it as well. I would note that he started with some of this verbiage back in Berrien County last month at a Republican event, and I publicly criticized him then, as I still do today. You know, particularly on a day today, as we celebrate the legacy of Dr. King, and I'm going to paraphrase here, but, you know, he made it very clear in a number of his speeches and statements that by letting racism and bigotry stand, you are, in essence, going along with it. And I don't think that what Mr. Adjema said was right. I don't think what some feel in support of his statements is right. And I joined, I know, with my state senator, John Prose, and state rep, Al Pashoka, and the governor. As the governor used his opening. I missed his speech. I was in
State
Washington
of the State
coming
of
back. But I think that's actually how he opened up his State of the State, by addressing that, not by name, Mr. Adjema, but
everyone in the room knew what he was talking
about.
Everybody
knew, and I think they had done a little pre-meeting to let people know that that's what it was directed at. But terribly uncalled for in his remarks. And I think that it's responsible for all of us to condemn those remarks. And I did so when I first saw them last month.
Has there been something of a shift here on this issue? I understand that gay marriage may still not be 100% in favor. It may not win every vote. But has there been something of a shift on what's tolerated in the realm of this debate?
Well, you know, for Michigan, it really dates back to the ballot proposal that we had. I want to say it was like 10, 12 years ago, something like that, where Michigan voters decided to put in that language actually into the Constitution, as I recall.
Quite a few other states the same year.
Yeah, and I don't know what's, you know, I don't know whether the state, I don't know whether the state legislature can reverse that. I don't know if it has to come back for a vote.
It would have to come back to the voters as a constitutional amendment.
And so you have to get petitions, I would imagine, to get it on the ballot. For me, I've all my days signed a statement in terms of hiring of folks that I will not discriminate based on the issue of sexual preference. I've always been supporter of civil unions to allow folks to have a number of legal rights. But in terms of a national issue, in terms of national legislation, and I guess the courts now have made some rulings. Utah, the most recent, as it was in their statute, and I'm not exactly sure how it got to where it was, but I think the courts will have some ruling, but I don't see national legislation probably going back to instead to the states. And maybe it's going to be readdressed here. I'm not sure.
There was recently a federal court ruling on the whole issue of net neutrality, or the Federal Communication Commission's open Internet order. Basically, it struck that down. You welcomed that federal court ruling and said that you would hope that the FCC would let it stand there. Why do you welcome that?
Well, we look at what's happened with the Internet, the net. When the Communications Act was last written, I want to say it was in 1994, I don't think there were any references to the Internet at all. People that really didn't know what it was. Look at the jobs created today, whether it be apps or Spectrum, all these different devices. My view has always been to let the private sector roll things out and not let the government get in its way. And when the FCC came up with these regulations a number of years ago, there was an effort in the Congress to try and reverse that. It failed. It didn't get all the way through. As I recall, the Senate blocked it. But there was a pretty good feeling that, in fact, the courts would strike it based on the merits of the law. And that's exactly what happened on a 2-1 decision. So I would be surprised, frankly, if the FCC decides to go back and tries to figure out how they might want to regulate the net. I was not one that went to look at the big show in Vegas this last weekend, which is the traditional show. It's actually, I think, one of the largest shows. They have all the new devices, the new TVs, the new websites. I mean, the lovely things that we'd all like to have, a dream. So I don't see the government stepping in to regulate some of those things. And if they did, there probably would be a day late or two, maybe a year late in terms of what's actually available. So I don't see the FCC coming back with it, to answer your question.
But could you make an argument that this open Internet policy where, Verizon just has to, for instance, allow anyone, to use the site, you can't charge them anymore.
Well, then
has that made the Internet what it is?
Well, then I think people will migrate to a different site. So Netflix will make the argument that, when they send the movies and everything else, that takes so much more space, the digital space.
Someone will make that argument about Netflix.
I think that, if someone is out there slamming one of the carriers for this, you'll see another carrier step up and offer different services. And the consumer will be able to decide what it is that they want and the cost that they want to pay. I think that the system will work without net neutrality rules, which is why the court made the decision that it did.
What about government websites, say, for Congressman Fred Upton or for a political campaign website, which, of course, would not even be a government website? Should there be exceptions for that or anything?
You mean a special privilege?
Right.
No, I don't think there should be.
You're listening to West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with West Michigan Congressman Fred Upton. Also here is Yvonne Zipp of the Kalamazoo Gazette. Yvonne?
Last month, a political article had said that you were among a number of congressmen urging House Speaker Boehner to stand up to the Tea Party. And I was wondering, do you see the Tea Party's influence continuing to grow?
Yeah, let me just say a couple things. First of all, the story was somewhat inaccurate, remarks taken a bit out of context. I've gone back to the source of that story, but I would just say it was a closed meeting. Rules are usually, this is a meeting in the speaker's office, and often members are reminded that it is a closed meeting, and this happened a number of, I want to say, years ago, and it's not accurate the way that it was described. But to honor those rules, it's a little bit difficult for me to then comment directly on the story. I'll just say, so let me just say this, that, you know, the Tea Party movement that's out there really formed under the with the direction of a fight on fiscal issues, balancing the budget, responsible tax code, a whole number of different things. That was actually one of the underlying reasons why I first ran for Congress. Running for Congress was never a dream that I had as a little boy or even after I graduated from college. But it was the fiscal issues that really sort of provided the push for me to run. And so I support many of the issues as it relates to fiscal issues that the Tea Party espouses. So I guess just to say I did not use the word Tea Party in my discussion with the speaker or in that room that day.
Did you perhaps say that there was certain conservatives who you thought?
No, I didn't use the word conservative either. I view myself as a conservative, Gordon, as you know, but it's so it's a little bit out of context that's out there. But it was a closed meeting, and you know, it was a number of years ago.
Do you think the Tea Party, not related to the meeting?
You're a good reporter, Yvonne.
Not related to the meeting. Yeah. Do you think the Tea Party's influence in the country will continue to grow,
well,
or do you think it's peaked?
You know, it's a political element that's there. Let's face it. In certain areas of the country, it's stronger than not. You know, for me, I've got a number of folks that are in the Tea Party that support Fred Upton, and I've got, you know, some that do not.
And you have a primary challenger.
I have a primary from that same view again, and it seems as though you know, one of his big issues is that he's worked for my opponent the last two times, and so you know it's politics, right? It's just where it is. So I know that I represent 705,000 people, and I will do my best to help every one of them, whether they were a supporter or not.
Well, let me ask you about something you said on the record, I believe sitting in that very chair you're in now, which is that there are a number of Republicans in the House who are simply there to vote no on everything.
There are, yep.
Is that becoming an obstacle to getting meaningful things done?
Let me just say that. So let me answer and then you come back to me if you want, which I know that you do anyway. You know, for me, I've always viewed myself as a governing Republican. Republicans are in the majority in the House. The answer is not just voting no, because you're not going to get anything done, and we have divided government. And I'm one that wants to move legislation forward on a host of fronts. I'll go back to the whole issue of the government shutdown last October. I've said many times there were no winners, only losers. In a number of events, even here in our district, it was more than just federal offices being shut. I mean, there was a real impact on the life of lots of people. Two examples that I'll cite. We almost saw the shutdown of one of our nuclear plants. I mean, as we know, it's thousands of workers, literally. And it was over a safety issue that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission was not staffed to allow the replacement of a number of spark plugs on a grid. And, you know, at the end, if they couldn't get the approval to replace, you know, I don't know, a dozen or so spark plugs on a grid of 70, the whole, I mean, talk about silly, but needed to be safe, but ultimately would have had a real impact on West Michigan. We've got another company in our district. It's not quite done, so I won't name the company, but it's not Pfizer or Stryker or Whirlpool, okay, or Perrigo, but that's all I'm going to tell you. But we've got another company that's at the very end now of doing a acquisition in the billions of dollars, lots of jobs. And as we know, you got financiers, banks, other lenders. I mean, you've got certain dates that you've got to hit, and there was no one home at the Federal Trade Commission to say whether or not that was going to go. They think work stopped for literally 2.5 weeks. So real issues, more than just that. So anyway, bottom line, It was a only losers. Good thing to say is that the Ryan Murray budget, which passed since I've seen you last, was in December, passed 3-1 in the House. Ryan, Republican, you know, Murray, Democrat, and we just put the put those numbers into play with the omnibus spending bill last week. It passed with 359 votes. Now, if you want to just vote no, and there were some, and, you know, I'm not going to, you know, some just like to vote no. I won't identify names. But, you know, that is not what I went there to do. You got to make some tough decisions, and you got to be part of a process to move things forward. And when you have a divided government, you've got to listen, and you got to talk, and you got to be able to react and do something to get things done.
Okay. Speaking of getting things done, there's a post on the Time Magazine blog by Alex Rogers. With the headline, "Don't Be Fooled, It's Gridlock Time in Washington," says that after the budget bill being signed into law, Congress is unlikely to pass any other major piece of legislation this year, with the possible exception of a long overdue farm bill. Do you think that's right?
No, I don't. I'm hoping that we actually get to a farm bill perhaps as early as next week, but certainly in the next week or two, if it's not next week. We're very close, and I got to commend Senator Debbie Stabenow, who's the chair of the Senate Ag Committee, and Frank Lucas, the chair of the House Ag Committee. I think they're very close, at least when I left Washington, to come back this week. So that's done, but and it should pass with bipartisan support. You know, we can't default. I think we don't know what the timing of that's going to be yet, don't know what the deadline is. That'll have to be a bipartisan effort to resolve it. Immigration. The Republicans are going on a retreat next week. Immigration is on the front burner. One of our missions is to develop a mission statement. I've talked about this for the last number of months. And I believe that we can move 5 or 6 different pieces of legislation, all bipartisan, to address a problem that is the current system is broken. Doing nothing perpetuates that broken system. So I am a believer that we can get it done. Tax reform, I'd like to see happen. Our big fight is the clock right now. And frankly, the shutdown last fall cost us what otherwise would have been, I think, the start of that legislation. We'll see where it goes.
When you're saying the clock there, you mean that we've got an election.
Legislative clock, yeah.
Well, and we've got an election coming up and people get
things
antsy.
Yeah. You know, you got primaries coming. I mean, it is a crazier time than normal. And I want to go back to how we started this, TSCA. I'm giving a big speech in the next couple weeks. It seems as though seem to be coming together. People know that, you know, it hasn't happened in a long time. And we've started discussions staff-wise, member-wise, that I think we really can move a bill out of our committee perhaps sometime early this spring.
Yvonne?
Speaking of immigration reform, you had mentioned when last we spoke that that was a harder road in an election year. Do you think there's enough time?
Well, it is. The clock works against us because, you know, you got hardcore detractors. No matter what it is, they'll call it amnesty, even though that's not what it is. And it's, you know, it took the Senate, remember, a whole month. To develop what was a pretty comprehensive bill. I want to say 1,500, 2,000 pages long. And even some of the big supporters of it that voted for it in the Senate have said now they don't think that's the approach that's going to take. So where we are in the House is, I think, you know, it's important that we come to some agreement on some principles by the end of next week, which I expect to happen and which I'll be part of that debate. And then instead of looking at a huge comprehensive, you know, 1,500-page bill, we'll be looking at them in terms of single issues. So you'll look at a bill on just border security. Now, it just so happens that Candace Miller from our state has got a bill that passed out of Homeland Security on border security and passed with every Democrat and Republican vote in the committee. That's ready to go. We need a system for our ag workers. No, you don't need them, farm workers on a day like today. It's cold as can be. But come spring with asparagus through apples in the fall, we need a workforce. And this last year, we left probably tens of millions, maybe even more, of produce in the farm because we didn't have the workers to come get it. Well, we need a system for the dreamers, for the, you know, the kids that came at whatever age and are now, you know, maybe even in their 20s. They've gone through our education system. They don't have a place to return to. Their families are here. You know, they've got education, maybe even in great places like Western and other places. And we want people driving on the streets with driver's licenses. We want people to have insurance. And there are jobs. There are jobs. And we also want to make sure that the folks that are here without the proper documents know that, yes, there are some that want them all to return to where they started. But let's face it, that's just not feasible. So let's figure out a system, maybe putting them on probation. I mean, we'll see what the Judiciary Committee does. Maybe putting them on probation, making sure their back taxes are paid. Maybe there's a small fine on top of that. But we want to make sure they don't have a felony record. I mean, those types of things. They go to the end of the line if they choose to become a citizen. But they're going to be on probation for a while, maybe a couple. You know, we'll see how this process evolves before they can really step up if they choose to be an American citizen. And, you know, those are some of the we need to increase H-1B visas. Our companies, particularly those with the international bent, Pfizer, Perrigo, which, you know, their headquarters is now in Ireland. I mean, all these folks need more highly trained workers, and that cap is pretty low in terms of what they can have. And, of course, when you have people working, they're paying taxes, I mean, it is we're a better community for it.
Okay, down to our last couple minutes.
I can go another half hour, Gordon.
Well, okay. Except I know you've got other
all
things
right,
to
I
do.
Do. So, Vaughn's got me later on.
That's
sorry.
Right. I normally would not bring up traffic in New Jersey, but the governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie, was a guy that you said you would like to see run for president. Actually, back in 2012, you said you would like to have seen him seek the presidency. And, of course, he's mentioned for 2016, but how does this affect him moving forward?
Well, it does affect him in that he's been pretty vocal in terms of what he did and what he did not do. And if there is some, quote, correction of the record, i.e. if he's proved false, then I think that he's in duck soup. But I watched a little bit of his press conference a week or two ago, and he seemed to be pretty direct when he said he had no direct knowledge. He called the right people in on his staff. They're no longer on his staff. He apologized for their actions. Buck stops here, as it, you know, with the governor. And if that, you know, continues to prove true, and so far I think it has, though of course there is an investigation, then I think that, yeah, it's a black eye for sure, but it's not a crippling effort. And it seems as though a story like this, it's a couple weeks old, does seem to have a little bit more political legs than perhaps substantive. But I think people are going to see where the dust settles. And but if he's telling the truth, it's people aren't going to remember that maybe a year or two from now.
West Michigan Congressman Fred Upton, as always, thank you for your time.
You bet.
And thanks to Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Yvonne Zipp. Thank you for participating.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.